Good afternoon. I'd like to call the House Transportation Committee to order. Today is Thursday, February 14th, 2023. We're in the Barnes Committee Room 124 of the Alaska State Capitol Building. Let the record reflect that the time is 1:02 p.m. Today we have present Representative McKay, Representative Vance, Representative Sumner, and so far Representative Stutes, and myself, Chair McCabe. The staff that will be assisting us today are Recording Secretary Linda Jensen and Moderator Kelsey Riker. Buddy Witt is my committee aide. Thank you to those three for their hard work. We have two items of business today. First, the committee will take up the appointment of James Cunningham to the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots, and that will be followed by a presentation from the Alaska Marine Highway System. Any questions from the committee members before we begin? Seeing none, I'd like to welcome Mr. James Cunningham, who has been appointed to the Board of Marine Pilots. Alaska Statute 08.62 establishes the Board of Marine Pilots and their duties. AS 08.62.040A1 states the board shall provide for maintenance of efficient and competent pilotage service on the inland and coastal water of and adjacent to the state and to assure protections of shipping, the safety of human life and property, and the issuance of original or renewal pilot licenses to qualified persons. The board is a critical component in assuring safe passage through Alaska's waterways. This is Mr. Cunningham's first appointment to the board, and he is joining us via Teams today. Mr. Cunningham, thank you for your willingness to serve the state, and welcome to the House Transportation Committee. Please place your name on the record and tell the committee a little bit about yourself, your experience, and why you want to serve on the Board of Marine Pilots. And before you do that, I'd like to welcome Representative Mina to the table. And go ahead, Mr. Cunningham.
For the record, my name is James Cunningham, and I'd like to respond to the chair. Thank you, Mr. McCabe, Representative McCabe. It's a pleasure to be able to serve on the Board of Marine Pilots. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I can start by giving a little background about myself. I spent a little bit of time here in Ketchikan as a young kid. My father worked in Ward Cove, and I only spent a little bit of time before I was about 5 years old. We moved to Washington and spent most of our time there, but I came up and fished, seined out at Southeast and did a little tendering throughout high school, kept some contacts, friends, family in the Ketchikan area. And I just sort of fell in love with the Alaska waters and just going to sea. And I ended up getting into Maine Maritime Academy. And I graduated with a Bachelor of Science in Nautical Science, and that's basically driving ships. And I graduated in 97 and did a number of different jobs in the industry, but mainly you come out with the third mate unlimited tonnage license and you work your way up to captain. And that's what I did around the world, but I kept coming back to Alaska and ended up doing a little bit of tanker work, and then I worked for Sealand, which became Horizon Lines, and then now Matt's. And that's what brought me back to the position I'm in today, where I was sailing as captain on the container ships, and I got to know the pilots, and I was in the right place at the right time in a beautiful area, and the opportunity came up where I could throw my hat in the ring, and that's what I did. I went in 2015, I was voted in, and in 2018, I was a deputy pilot, and I became a full pilot in August of 21. And I've got two kids up here. I live in Homer. We're really enjoying the change of pace, and I'm really enjoying the job. So that wraps it up for my background, pretty much. Back to you, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Cunningham. So I'm looking for questions from the committee. Representative Stutz.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I don't really have a question. I just have a comment, and that is how much I appreciate what the pilots do and all the education that you get and the knowledge of the waters you have. I'm totally impressed, and so I think it's really great, and I'm happy that you've submitted your name for this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any further questions, Representative Mina?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, one quick comment and one small question. My comment echoes Representative Stutz. I'm very impressed with your experience, and I appreciate your willingness to serve. Just out of curiosity, outside of your career, I'd love to learn more about any community work or other service that you've done within Alaska or outside of Alaska. Thank you.
For the record, my name is James Cunningham. I'd like to speak through the chair to Representative Mina. In answer to your question, there is a program that is in the Navy. I was in the Naval Reserves, and the program that I was in is the Merchant Marine Ready Reserve, and that's a 6-year commitment. I was discharged after that 6 years as a lieutenant, and it's basically maintaining your professional background in case of war, they would call us up to serve as a merchant marine, and the professional mode to move gear around the world. So I did that, and that was it required that you do what is called active training once a year, and then you keep your license up. So beyond that, in Alaska itself, I do not have, we've been up here 8 years. It's been a pretty big, busy road with 2 kids and jumping through the training program with the pilots. So I do hope to help out more in the future, but right now I'm barely keeping the kids fed and in school on time. So I'm working on it. Thank you.
Thanks, Mr. Cunningham. And Representative Stutz has one more question.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, I'm curious, did in your training to get your final captain's license, were you able to use any of the services of the Alaska Marine Highway System?
For the record, my name is James Cunningham, and responding through the chair to Representative Stutz. Part of the training requires that you get local knowledge and required trips in certain areas, and many of those areas I didn't already have from my work. My existing career, like I had all of Cook Inlet and all the trips I needed for there to show that I had a local knowledge. I'd seen the area. There's a ton of coastline here in Southwest that everyone really, I think, can understand that you're not going to go everywhere all the time. So you use one of the avenues is using the ferries to ride and get your trips in, so that I can, what we do is we get so many trips that are required, and then we draw a chart to show that we've memorized the area and we know the hazards and stuff like that in the background. So I did use the ferries. There was there were a lot of helpful people. It's sort of a difficult process, and it, sometimes it does cost a sum of money that is pretty tough when you're training and not making a salary, but it was, it all worked out. It was efficient. I met a ton of really good people with the ferry service. So it was, I'm very thankful for that.
Follow up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you might guess, it's just a comment. I'm delighted to hear the pilots working with the Marine Highway System. I think it's a win-win deal, both for the pilots and for the Alaska Marine Highway System. So thank you for that, Mr. Chair, and for your indulgence.
Thanks. I'm a little curious. You mentioned that Mr. Cunningham, it's Representative McCabe. You mentioned that it costs money. So did you have to pay to go on the ferry?
For the record, my name is James Cunningham. Representative McCabe. Yes, I did. I don't know what it is today, but it was you paid a reduced fare. I believe it's full fare now, but you, for every day that you were on, I was on, I could ride as a pilot trainee. They knew that I was just standing by on the bridge and I was allowed to do that. And, basically I just rode, for sometimes, you know, a week or two and just paid a daily rate. And that's what it takes. You get some of the areas are pretty difficult to get because the ferries don't get there all that much. And say it's, certain industries that used to come to some of the outports, they just don't do the business anymore. There's like log ships that just aren't as frequent anymore. So your jump, there's a lot of coordination and there's it's an economic trick to get through the piloting, the training, and still make sure that you have money in your bank account.
Right.
So it's a little different. Thank you.
I can imagine. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, so seeing no other questions, thank you, Mr. Cunningham, for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks, all of you, and I appreciate all your time. Would I sign off at this point, Mr. Chair?
You can sign off, or you can stay on. We have just a little bit of business to do. You can stay on for that if you'd like, and then once the ferry, the Marine Highway System starts their presentation, we'll be done with you. So in accordance with the AS39.05.080, the House Transportation Committee held a hearing on the following appointee, James Cunningham, to the Alaska Board of Marine Pilots. The signature on this report does not reflect the intent by any of the members to vote for or against confirmation of the individual during any further session. So we will take a brief at ease and sign the report. Oh, I got to beat the thing. Okay, so we're back on the record. Mr. Cunningham, if you you can depart if you'd like, or you can hang around and watch the Marine Highway System presentation. And I got to tell you, I will be calling you someday soon to talk about the current at Port McKenzie and how the pilots view it. So thank you
Mr.
so much.
Yeah, I would like to stay on, Mr. Chair, if that's possible.
Sure, absolutely. So we're back on the record. We will now move into our second and final agenda item of the day, a presentation on the Alaska Marine Highway System. Joining us today in person is Deputy Commissioner Catherine Keith, and via Teams, our Administrative Services Director, and I guess Mr. Pannone is here in person. So, but for via Teams is General Manager Captain Anthony Carvelis and Capital Program Manager Wayne Phillips. Deputy Commissioner Keith, welcome to you and your team. If you will please place your name on the record and begin your presentation. And Mr. Cunningham, if you would please mute your microphone.
Yeah, thank you, Chair McCabe. And to the committee, thanks for the invitation to be here and talk about our Alaska Marine Highway System. You recognize our DOT staff that are in the room supporting this presentation, and I'd also like to recognize our legislative liaison, Andy Mills, in the room as well, and appreciate everybody being here, both on Teams and in person. I know everyone would prefer to be here in person, but we do what we can. So before I hand the mic over to our general manager, Captain Tony Carvalhas, I just want to acknowledge that we have a number of people in kind of burgeoning leadership roles, and I think the two gentlemen here that you see on Teams are a great example of that. And so Captain Karvalas, in an acting capacity, has stepped up since our last general manager, Captain John Falvey, retired after 19 years of service. So Captain Karvalas himself has been a part of AMHS for 14 years and does bring a wealth of knowledge and experience into running our system. So we really appreciate his effort as he's been drinking through the fire hose most likely over the last month. Also, I'll introduce Wayne Phillips in a little while, but he's our capital program manager. And we'll be speaking to some of our major capital investments from our discretionary grant awards that we've received. And we're grateful for his experience in project management to help us with this significant investment, which we're very grateful to have. So with that, Captain Tony Karvalas, do you want to speak to this slide?
For the record, Captain Karvalas, AMHS Acting General Manager, just a brief introduction of myself. Like Captain Cunningham, I graduated from Maine Maritime in 1990, and I immigrated out to the great state of Alaska to be here and to work for the Marine Highway System. I worked on ocean-going vessels internationally and then inland tug and barge operations and salvage in the New York area and the San Francisco area. And I found this job back in 2008 and came to work for the Marine Highway System as a assistant port captain, and I worked my way up to port captain and operations manager, and now I'm happy to serve as the acting general manager. So you can see from this slide that, you know, the Marine Highway System covers a great area. You know, there's a bunch of slides out there that we didn't put in the presentation, but if you overlaid the state of Alaska over the United States, it would pretty much go from coast to coast. And that's the area we cover. We might not have as many passengers and vehicles as Washington State ferries, but we definitely cover a larger area. And the logistics of our operation is quite extensive. What we do, you know, we've been around for 60 years, and we provide essential service to coastal communities throughout Alaska. And a lot of that is transporting people and vehicles and freight throughout the system and to Alaska communities. And a lot of these communities depend on us. They're, you know, villages that can be isolated. You know, they really need the Marine Highway System to be able to live their lives in an efficient manner and be able to visit relatives, attend funerals, all those things that people do throughout Alaska, you know, to connect the communities and to provide those essential services. I mean, the ferry is often a way that fresh fish gets around, and it's livestock. We transport any legal road limit item. So we've transported all kinds of stuff. You know, we do farm animals and tractors, trailers, construction equipment. We're a large transporter of the military up across the Gulf of Alaska to get to some of the military bases up north. And we do transport people that are going to the interior of Alaska as well. So they use our ferry system quite a bit in order to make their way into Anchorage and Fairbanks and Matsu. So, you know, we do all those things. And so that's a next slide, please. And from this slide, you can see that many of our vessels are in a winter shipyard. We are pleased to report that the Columbia did get underway yesterday. So that's a change on that slide. She is operating on the Bellingham route, bringing people up through the state and providing services in Southeast Alaska. But while our ships are in the shipyard, we conduct regulatory inspection. We service our safety equipment, get through our Coast Guard certifications. We do repairs and upgrades and steel replacement. You know, as the ships get on in age, the steel replacement becomes more and more necessary. So So we do a lot of that in those periods, and it's, those are also regulatorily required, that we dry dock the ships, every year. So, we have tons of maintenance items that we try to get done, and, those are done in the shipyard because it's very difficult to do while the ships are in service. And we have passengers aboard. Okay. Next slide, please. This is a slide representing our passenger and vehicle count. You can see that over the years, the passengers have been decreasing, and we got to a low point here at the end of 2019 and the beginning of 2020. It's been on a downward trend. And part of the reason for that is because we had a labor strike, and then we rolled right into COVID-19. And so that affected the Marine Highway system quite a bit. We've been doing our best to try to recover from that. We suffered some crew shortages that have affected our ability to operate ships. And we're also working on those items, and I'll be able to speak about that later on in the presentation. But those are the reductions you can see there. Our vehicle traffic, it also declined, you can see, in 2020. And you can see that the figures are rebounding a little bit. And we believe that those trends will continue, and we'll be able to get our service levels back up, get our crew levels back up, and start operating more ships.
Thanks, Captain. Representative Stutes has a question.
Thank you. Through the chair. Captain, don't you think that maybe some of the decrease in the ridership, both vehicle-wise and passenger-wise, was due to the undependability of the marine highway system due to maintenance problems with the vessels?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, you are correct. You know, we have suffered crewing shortages, and we have suffered staff shortages in the building. And so the Marine Highway System, and the engineering department, for the amount of people they have, they do, I believe, a good job. But it's hard to, you know, take care of everything, you know, when you don't have enough people. And, you know, you are true in that regard, you know, correct in that regard that, you know, it's been difficult. It's been a difficult road, but we hope to turn that around and get things going in the right direction. And I believe that we're on that path.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. You can continue, Mr. Cunningham, or Captain, I should say. Captain, my captain.
Mm-hmm. So for the record, Catherine Keith, really appreciate the question, Representative Stutes. And one thing I feel that was very timely was the beginning of the Alaska Marine Highways Operations Board, which did kick off in February of last year. And one thing became very apparent was the increase of information from the public to the Department of Transportation about our service. So it became very clear that reliability was a number one challenge. And it's something that we've been working to find metrics and data for really over the past year, which led to this effort, which is charting the course towards thriving communities. The governor's office announced the official launch of this program on September 9th of last year. And it was really this recognition that right now our service is not reliable and we're struggling to make forward progress. The stabilization phase is the first of three phases, going to recovery and then full steam ahead. And in stabilization phase, we're recognizing that we're not gaining in crew like we want to be. We're certainly, our vessels aren't getting any younger. And the maintenance needs just keep increasing. That is what it is. But one thing that we can do is communicate more with the public about the realities of our situation and some of our challenges, and then see how we can build partnerships to find solutions that work both for the future of the Marine Highway System and their customers that really depend on our services. And so in order to get information needed to have data-driven decision-making as part of our operations at AMHS, we looked pretty deeply into our crewing levels, a number of metrics that relate to our fleet and our budget as well. The goal was to understand where we could move the needle on our system and try to see some gains after staff have been working hard for many years to try to make progress and kind of turn the tide of our service. And so we have our subject matter experts here to speak a little bit more in depth about each of these three pillars of service. And we have tried to accommodate the public on a number of fronts in order to recognize that our service isn't what we would like it to be. One example is the removal of dynamic pricing. A lot of comments that we had received made it clear that dynamic pricing was not necessarily having the impact on the system that we hoped for, and it was a disincentive for our passengers. So we continue to look for things like that that we can do to acknowledge that while we're in stabilization phase, not able to address and meet the service levels that the communities would like us to, we're trying to find ways to make it easier.
Mm-hmm. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Keith, I know that part of the stabilization process, the legislature forward funded the Alaska Marine Highway System in order to provide an earlier schedule release for the public. And has the summer schedule been released as of yet? If I'm not mistaken, it should have been released, 6 or 8 weeks ago. And I'm curious if it's been released yet.
Yeah, through the chair to Representative Stutz, the summer schedule has not yet been released. We're looking forward to publishing this on Friday, and we do really appreciate the forward funding. As you look at the pillars of budget, fleet, and crew, the one thing that we're really glad we don't have to worry about so much is the budget piece, so we do understand from an operational perspective what funding we have available for decision-making. The challenge that we're facing with being able to put out a schedule in advance that people can rely on is the shortage of crews and some of our vessels, which have become completely unavailable over the summer. It was just last month when the Matanuska, which we had expected to be back in service for the summer, now became unavailable due to reasons which our capital program manager can get into. But now we have to look at our summer schedule all over again and see how we can provide service when we're down certain vessels in our fleet. And so we just continue to look at new ways on how we can provide a schedule that passengers can book on and depend on. And right now we're in a bit of, it's a dynamic balance to try to get this out.
Follow up.
Thank you. So your anticipation is that the summer schedule will be out Friday? Thank you.
Through the chair, Representative Stutz. Yes.
Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. I'm seeing the crew pillar here, the staffing levels is pretty low. And part of the issue for service to Homer and Saldovia is because of staffing and people getting sick and not having anyone to replace them. And, obviously that's detrimental to Saldovia being able to get goods and services. I did have someone in Saldovia this last summer and fall trying to get a job, but they sent in their resume. They were having a hard time hearing back in just the communication level. So to the public who may be interested in working in the Marine Highway, how can they contact you to make sure that you're receiving their application?
Through the chair to Vice Chair Vance, perhaps we could give out my cell phone to start. Please apply at the Marine Highway System. But in all seriousness, last summer, Commissioner Anderson and Captain Carvalhas had taken a trip out on the Testamina to Saldovia to hear some of their concerns, and we tried to identify some ways that we could improve service to Saldovia when Testamina was not available due to crewing shortages last year. And in fact, we even tried some supplemental services contracts to support Saldovia. And we'll continue to find some ways to work towards that. But on the crewing, we have hired a consultant firm about 5 months ago to try to help us with their onboarding process so that when applicants are reaching out, we have a number of ways to support them through the certifications that are required to become an employee of the Marine Highway System. For an entry-level person with no training, it can take up to 4 months, maybe longer. So there's a lot of steps to take, and we have a team of folks right now that are coming up with strategies to help make that easier for people, but that is a national challenge in the maritime industry, is getting folks through that process. But we do recognize that our ability to onboard interested employees hasn't been what we would like it to be, especially considering our staffing crisis. And so there's a number of things that we can share with you about how we're trying to address that.
Yes, through the chair, I think that would be helpful. And I think one of the areas is that we'd like to know how we can assist in that. Because if we have people who maybe are mechanics and feel that they could fit a need, but that need some other experience on there, they need to know what that path is. And so I'd love, you know, at another time, you know, just more information on that. Thank you.
Representative Mina.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, related to staffing, I am curious what the average retention is for different positions. Thank you.
Through the chair to Representative Mina. I would like to reply back with a report, if that's okay. Because of the number of positions and how they vary by union, we have different retention levels by position, and I do believe that that's a really interesting story to tell and could be helpful, but I wouldn't want to be anecdotal. I could provide that information, though.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, and I think the governor actually in the last hour or so has just taken steps to help with the shortage and relieved all the college education requirements wherever practical. So are you about industry level for, I mean, there's ferries in New York, there's ferries in Washington, in Puget Sound there. So are you about even with the rest of the industry, or are you higher or lower? I think I heard somewhere that you were like at a 50% vacancy rate. Is that about normal for everywhere else?
So Chair McCabe, and for the record, Catherine Keith, our current staffing levels, I would prefer to see some concrete numbers of what other ferry systems are experiencing right now. I know that they are all experiencing shortages. I feel that ours are more extreme than others in the lower 48, and part of that has to do with the travel. For those experts that are outside of the state, travel to state is sometimes prohibits their ability to get employment up here that's profitable to them and their families. We do have a good competitive package when you consider our state benefits, and so there's a lot of interest in our positions and constantly working on it. It's a marketing strategy almost to those in the lower 48 that are interested is one step, but we're really interested in working throughout rural Alaska to see those folks that are interested in new marine pathways, especially as our fishing industry's challenged right now. I think we could have a lot of potential for in-state recruitment.
Mm-hmm. Thanks. You can continue.
And for the record, Dom Panone, Admin Services Director for Department of Transportation. So one of the parts of the health check is, of course, the operating budget. And you saw on the previous graph where at the end of 2019, 2020, the system had taken quite a dip. But you do see that we're on a recovering trajectory. And so part of that trajectory is funding the system at an adequate level to what communities expect. And so, you know, starting roughly in calendar year 2022, we had a budget of $120 million. The current calendar year 23 budget is $140 million, and the calendar year 24 request is approximately $158 million. And so what we've been doing largely with that, the current year and the year that's being requested, is we're looking at the funding level required to keep all of our ships in service. And we look at, the burn rates, how much staff it takes to have a ship running underway, fueled, and the routes, and we get a general idea. But the general premise of the budget is that all of our ships are going to be running. We will have enough funds to staff them at full staffing, and we'll be able to provide the maximum services we can wherever possible. Next slide.
Representative Stutz.
Thank you. Through the chair, when you said having all of our ships running, how many do you anticipate that be? I see right here on your slide you have 9 vessels. How many do you anticipate when you say all of our ships running?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, thank you for the question. So when we are crafting the budget, we are, first of all, understanding that every ship has an annual overall haul period where it will be offline for maybe a few months while it's getting its work done. But what we're looking at is all the ships capable of running within the year. And so I guess I'll defer to Catherine Keith about which specifically wouldn't be running, but
yeah. For the record, Catherine Keith. So our current proposed operating budget is based on a selection of 7 vessels operating this summer or through the year.
Mm-hmm. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
I'm presuming that means no Matanuska. And what other one are you anticipating won't be running?
Yeah, for the through the chair, Representative Stutz, one thing I'd like to comment on is that our budget – proposed budget numbers are slightly different than some of the shuffling that's happening going forward into the year. And so what our budget does is allow us to both look at operating our vessels, and if we can't provide services, you know, are there options for supplemental services? So this budget is definitely tied to the number of vessels in operation, but also the staffing that's required to be on those vessels in overhaul. So I understand the nature of your question. It's just there's a couple unanswered questions to be able to say definitively, you know, which vessel will be in layup this summer or not. But at the time of the proposed budget, the Columbia was the vessel in layup, and the Columbia is now on its way to Bellingham. So it's a dynamic situation, but we do have a great business development manager, Matt McLaren, and his budget with experience has put forward what we believe to be an accurate budget of our needs this year.
Well, look, Mr. Chair.
So I'd just like to recognize first Representative Craig Johnson joined us at 1:38 p.m. And you can go ahead
your
follow-up.
So, but you did say you don't anticipate the Matanuska being operational, and you can't tell me what other one you are guessing may not be operational?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, at this point, our team is working through possible scenarios for this summer. It's why our summer schedule hasn't been published at this point. But we can come up with the costs for the vessels that went into our operating budget.
Follow-up, Mr. Follow-up. Chair? I guess I'm having a little trouble with that because the schedule's coming out Friday. So I'm guessing that you would have some clue as to what vessels wouldn't be operational. So you can't say what other vessel's not going to be operational. Is that correct? So you're anticipating 7 vessels. Are you going to change them in and out? So, I mean, I would think if you're anticipating 8 vessels and you know the Matanuska is going to be tied up, you would know another one's going to be tied up. And so what other one is being leaned towards being tied up? Maybe that's a better way to phrase it.
Yeah. Through the chair, Representative Stutz, I think our entire staff would greatly appreciate if we had a static system that we could rely on with a definite number of staff that we could also rely on. So when we're putting together our budgets, we have to create a little bit of flexibility within the budget to allow for us to meet our service levels. So that's how this budget was proposed. Unfortunately, our situation with the vessels or staff are not static, and so they are changing, and even this week there's changes in our operational strategy for the summer, and we look forward to talking more with this committee about that to share information as we have current up-to-date information about our vessel statuses.
So maybe I can help a little bit with it. Which one's currently in layup right now, the Matanuska and their Kennecott still?
No, the testee, I think, is just coming out.
Yes, Chair McCabe, for the record, Catherine Keith, the vessels in layup at the a moment are the Matanuska. The rest are in overhaul.
That's the only one?
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Vance.
Thank you, through the chair. This is my first time sitting on committee. So can you talk what your operational plan is, knowing that the vessels have to have a yearly required maintenance? If you had your ideal, is there an overlap of, hey, you know, this vessel is going to be out during these months, so this vessel can cover during, you know, provide that service during that time, you know, in staggered approach? Can you just explain to me what the overall plan would look like and the budget to fit that? Because looking at the fleet status and understanding the lack of reliable service, because it seems like we, you know, one vessel, you know, the Tustamina, for instance, it'll just get ready and then whoops, there's another hole or something. And we understand it's an aging vessel, but it seems that this has been an issue for several years. So what's the plan that you, if you could just wave the wand, and what your goal that you're trying to get to on that service of how to keep the fleets going so that there's reliable service. Could you give me that big picture as we're looking at this?
Yeah, through the chair, Vice Chair Vance, that's an excellent question. It's actually one question that we've been talking about at AMHS as we're looking at the years ahead through part of our short-range and long-range planning discussions. You know, what do we want this system to look like so it can be resilient, agile, flexible? Wayne Phillips on the call today can talk us through a little bit more about their overhaul process, but I think our dream would be that we can predict the duration of time when vessels are in the shipyard. I think our shipyard would prefer that as well, Vigor. What's often happening is even if we say it's a six-week yard period, there's discovery work that happens there in the yard that extends it both by millions of dollars and months at a time. So when we come up with an operating schedule, even one that has wiggle room in it to allow for that, there's still these extenuating circumstances because of the vessel's age that then put the plan, you know, out the window, so to speak. So right now, our strategy is to come up with backup plans as needed to be able to shuffle vessels around as needed to when one is in an extended overhaul period. Like the Matanuska was, and we can go into more depth about that situation. But our goal would be to be able to shorten our vessel overhaul periods by having a lot of advanced planning that goes into our overhauls before they get into the yard, and that we have more modern vessels that are more predictable with their overhaul and maintenance, which is why we're very happy for this FTA funding for modernization of our fleet and for new vessels as well. And when we have the new vessels, it will be able to give us a more predictable operating schedule that we can stick to.
Follow up?
Yeah.
Follow up.
You mentioned in the budget that you have room for some supplemental service to be able to provide that service. And I know that that's been a direction on trying to reach out to find supplemental service because of these unexpected delays. What's been your success rate overall in that, and is this level of funding been more than adequate for what you need due to price of fuel and things like that?
Yeah. Through the chair, Vice Chair Vance, that's an excellent question. It's something that we're looking at a little bit more in depth at the moment. Our successes last year, we had a number of situations where we were lucky to have some vendors in areas such as Prince William Sound, Kodiak Island, and here in Juneau, a number of vendors that have been willing to work with us on very last minute basis, sometimes hours before, to be able to help pick up a group of school kids and get them home where they needed to go when our vessels weren't able to do so. So I would say our success rate has, by definition of having partnerships with our vendors, been a success. Other things have been less successful. One example is our ability
to work and to plan ahead for supplemental services. We're just developing that as we go. It's hard for people to be able to plan for last minute when we have a supplemental service provider on our schedule just 2 or 3 days ahead of time. So we're working on some procedures to make that more in advance for the public. And also, there are just situations when people are not comfortable with catamarans, and a lot of our public private industry vendors are using catamarans. And so we're working on the right vessel, the right situation. But our as a transit agency, our goal is to keep people moving. We're trying to come up with some strategies so that we can perform our mission in a way that the public and all our stakeholders are supportive of. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Stutz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And on that note, I don't know what the process is for hiring some of these vendors, but what I can tell you from firsthand constituencies, when the AMHS hired an independent vendor to take the high school kids from Whittier back to Cordova, and they had their chaperones with them, which were seasoned fishermen, they were scared spitless. This, wherever this vendor came from, they were out in the middle. They finally turned around, but they were in waters that they had no business being in. And so I hope there's a little bit better of a system to determine who you're going to hire as a third-party contractor. And I understand it's all kind of learning as you go, and I imagine that was a pretty valuable lesson. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. So I just have one question. Last year or 2 years ago, I think, your collective bargaining agreements would not allow, I think, contracting only into 6 villages maybe or 6 ports of call. So now are there more, or is there some relief you get from the CBA to allow that kind of contracting?
Yeah. So for the record, Catherine Keith, so Chair McCabe, you're correct about our collective bargaining agreements. There's just a number of villages that by contract we don't need to have a letter of agreement in advance before providing services. And all the other instances where we are communicating with our union representatives and getting the LOAs in hand. So it's a conversation that we have. We're really, really grateful of our union reps because they are understanding of our situation and they want to help us keep our system running. But it is a challenge when we're not running our vessels with our staff, which is our number one goal. So it's a conversation that we have with them, and we just continue to find ways to support each other to make it a good environment for our crew.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. You can continue, whoever's going to start.
For the record, Dom Pannone, Alaska DOT. So on this slide here, this is an outline of our calendar year 2024 governor's proposed budget. The pie chart on the right shows by fund source, federal, UGF, and AMHS system revenue fund. So this budget is structured largely largely identical to the current calendar year 2023 budget. The only difference in this budget is that we funded operational increases with system revenues, approximately $13.5 million. The makeup of that operational increase is approximately $10 million from bargaining unit agreements, an increase in fuel of approximately $2.4 million, and an increase in travel costs of approximately $700,000. So the top right table there shows the breakout by fund source. And this bottom right table here shows the current calendar 2023 budget and then the previous year's budget that was the forward funding and the first calendar year operational budget that we had as a system. Go to the next slide. So traditionally, the Marine Highway System has used a number of metrics, and two of the metrics that we use often to describe the level of service is weeks of service and planned port calls. A week of service is any ship sailing a route at any point during a week, as long as the ship is in service. Planned port calls is any time a ship arrives at port that counts as a port call. So those are two of several metrics that we have, but we often use those as a comparison, as a base comparison when we're talking about budgets. You'll see that we have a decrease in the top table of planned ports and planned weeks of service. That's not due to the budget, but that's due to our most recent projections in staffing and ship availability. So, but largely, again, the budget is structured on running all of our ships at keeping them in service at all the time, the ships that are available. Looking at the bottom, you can see, again, the comparison of fund sources. And at the very bottom is an excerpt from our annual financial report showing the breakout of our operating expenditures in fiscal year 2022. The revenue in that year was $31.3 million. It was up $3.4 million from the prior year. And again, we're hoping to increase our revenues and our ridership back to pre-pandemic levels. Next slide. This is a timeline for context and awareness of the decisions that have been made around the newly created rural ferry grants that were a product of the bipartisan infrastructure law. The law was signed back in 2021, right before the governor submitted the calendar year 2023 budget, which we are on now. We submitted that budget with a very high level of federal funding, and that moved through the 32nd legislature there in yellow, and that federal funding level was reduced to about $80 million. And after that budget became law and was passed, that was when the Federal Transit Administration came out with the criteria for this new rural ferry grant operating grant. So it was after the budget had been passed that we were made aware of the certain conditions of this grant, which is that only net operating costs were eligible for assistance, and then only 50% of the net operating costs would be federally funded. So that changed quite a bit. That is not how we interpreted the grant to come out or to be administered. So at that time, we worked with our federal, our congressional delegation and our federal partner to have the conditions be at 100% federal participation. We weren't successful in making that point yet. We're still continuing for next year to have that grant come to us at 100%. But in that time, the deadline for the grant submission came, and so we adjusted our numbers down to the 50% of net operating costs revenue. We were successful in getting that grant and successful in receiving a significant number of capital grants, which we also submitted in order to capture all funds available. So that is good news. We did capture $240 million of capital grants and $44 million for operating costs. So now in the blue area there, the 33rd legislature, we have submitted the funding level at the same federal level appropriated by the legislature last year, and we're continuing to work with our congressional delegation and federal partners on having that federal authority be funded at 100%. Next slide.
For the record, Catherine Keith. That a lot of the conversation today has been around fleet health, so I'm very grateful that Wayne Phillips, our capital program manager, is here to speak to the status of our vessels. Mr. Phillips?
Yeah, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Wayne Phillips. I am the capital projects manager for the Alaska Marine Highway System. I'm also a senior vessel construction manager, and I would like to thank the House Transportation Committee for listening to me today. I'll give you a little bit of my background. I've been with the state of Alaska, with the Marine Highway in particular, for about going on 19 years now. During that time, I've been the International Safety Management Coordinator. I was a Vessel Construction Manager 1, Vessel Construction Manager 2, and a Vessel Construction Manager 3. Previous to being with the Alaska Marine Highway, I spent 21 years in the United States Coast Guard. So once I retired from the Coast Guard, I thought I was going to get away with away from boats, but apparently that did not happen, and I'm still here. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and get started here. The first slide here talks about the fleet health check. And the modernization of the fleet, as our vessels age, the reliability risk increases. We all know that. And the current fleet average is 34.1 years, which means that the fleet's overhaul reliability risk is medium. Unfortunately, our vessel availability, some of the vessels in the fleet will be unavailable at times for routine overhauls. During these routine overhauls, we're finding as these vessels age, as Captain Carballo spoke to earlier, you know, we are getting into finding discovery work, things that we did not anticipate. A lot of that has to do with steel. Over time, the steel deteriorates, and it gets to a point where we have to replace it, and there's no way around it. Normally, that's something that regulatory bodies will point out. Tell us that we have to resolve that and prior to going back into service. Next slide, please.
I have a question.
Representative Mina has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair, real quickly on the previous slide, so the average age of a vessel in the current fleet is 34.1 years old. How does that compare to the rest of the industry? Thank you.
Actually, that's the next slide I was getting to. And if you don't mind, I can't see the slide. I'm just looking at that. So that's the second slide. It shows the actual ages of our vessels. In the maritime industry, 25-year-old vessels are considered old. If we assume AMHS vessels at age 30 are the end of what we would call a prime lifespan, that is the point where reliability, discovery work, and other factors make the cost of running these vessels more expensive and the likelihood that that overhaul schedule can be impacted.
Thank you.
Vessel availability. Some of the vessels in the fleet will be unavailable at times for routine overhauls, like we just said. But if they extend beyond what is planned, the ability to maintain that schedule is impacted. We also measure shipyard forecasting. By doing our SMR backlog, that's ship's maintenance request backlogs, and a maintenance profile. One of the things I can speak to as well, we have a pretty good fleet condition survey program, where we have a consulting firm that comes in independently, goes through our vessels, and basically writes up the condition of that particular vessel, and then, places, basically a priorities of things that need to be done. Those are things that we look at, and they break it up in two things. Can this be done in an overhaul? And if it is, we'll try to bring that into the overhaul. Or can it only be done during a capital improvement project? Because the generally overhaul periods are short, and there's not enough time to do some of these larger capital improvement projects. Next slide, please. That's AMHS reliability next steps. So luckily, as Deputy Commissioner Keith spoke to about charting the course initiative, operational audits, like we just talked about, fleet condition survey, review of maintenance and overhaul practices, they're looking into that as well, leveraging younger ships in the fleet. So we're certainly trying to get the some of our younger vessels out there, the Alaska class ferries in particular, putting on crew quarters to make them more usable across the fleet. and pursuing capital programs for vessel replacements via IIJ funding and discretionary grants. To where I'm looking. And yes, we in fact do struggle with reliability. Our vessels do go through a rigorous Coast Guard inspection and overhaul process. On top of that, most of our vessels are ABS, American Bureau of Shipping classed, which is another regulatory process we must go through to ensure the safety of the vessel. In particular, anytime you're carrying passengers, we're actually held to a higher standard, which is good. In November, the Matanuska went in for an annual overhaul, and this is one of these discovery things that happens. As our vessels age, these overhauls become more expensive, take longer due to unexpected discoveries of degraded steel, aging vessel components, and many of these components consist of materials that used to be but are no longer acceptable. In particular, we're talking about asbestos, lead, chromates, PCBs, so there's a lot of things that we have to deal with now that some of these vessels that were built in the 1960s that we have to resolve as we move forward. As the work was completed on the Matanuska to update crew living quarters, a significant amount of asbestos-containing flooring, wall panels needed remediation. Replacing these panels also require further restoration of the vessel's structural components, driving the time and the cost of the work. Due to the extent of the work required, the decision was made to stop the work on the Matanuska at this time. And, we'll talk about bringing it back into service for the summer schedule. At this time, the Mat's serving as a hotel ship while the Columbia trades places. As you know, the Columbia is on its way down to Bellingham as we speak. I can also let you know that I reached out to a consulting firm this morning in order at Deputy Commissioner Keith's direction to get a hold of a consulting firm to get an accurate estimate on what exactly it's going to take to get the vessel, the Matanuska, back into service. And once we know that, it will be easier to make a decision on whether to keep her as a hotel ship, or actually try to get her fixed and up and running and back on the run. One of the points here as well is even while being utilized as a hotel ship for inmates and employees, the Columbia was in really good shape and was able to get underway. And just so everybody in the room knows as well, there was a lot of money put in the Columbia just to make sure in the event that we did have a vessel failure, we were able to put her back on the run to fill in the gap, and that's what we did.
So, Mr. Phillips, Representative yes. McCabe, if I could stop you for just a second, what's the issue with the Matanuska? Is it steel or engines?
Matanuska actually is, there is steel work. There's extensive steel discovery that was found, and hazmat, that being asbestos. Those are the two issues with the Matanuska at the moment.
That thing's pretty old. We didn't know there was asbestos on there. Okay. Continue. Sorry. Thanks.
No, that's okay. I think the next slide, we can talk a little bit about FTA awards. So vessel modernization, $72 million over the four vessels, and that's Columbia, Mat, Tasleena, and Kennecott. And I'll discuss those a little bit about exactly what's going on here in just a moment. Of course, we can talk about the vessel replacement, the Tasleena, replacement vessel of the TRV, that's $68.5 million award, and design of a new Alaska mainliner. That's $8.5 million award. And as I understand, the House Transportation Committee helped make that possible. So thank you for that. I think the Marine Highway certainly needs to be looking at another mainliner. And also climate response ferry vessel option, that's a $46 million award. And that's a low emission or no emission ferry that we'll be talking about.
So Representative Vance has a question.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Phillips, on this, on the bigger picture of the vessels, and the prior slide showed, you know, the age of the fleet. Has there been a presentation on what the long range plan is on replacing the fleets over time, the projected cost of those, and how there's going to be a very deliberate systematic ask on how those vessels are going to be replaced so that we can have the reliability, just like DOT does with all of their other trucks and things like that. You have a scheduled time of, hey, these have to be replaced, and you have a cost analysis showing if we replace it, it could save us money versus ongoing maintenance costs. Has there been this kind of presentation or document created on the long-range plan?
For the record, this is Wayne Phillips. My understanding, and that I cannot, you know, I can't speak to an actual presentation. I have not seen an actual presentation, so I don't want to speak for someone else. I know that a lot of these awards, grants have just come down, and I don't know if there has been a solid breakdown of exactly how that's going to happen or when it's going to happen. Certainly I'd have to defer to Deputy Commissioner Keith on that, because I don't know that answer.
Follow up.
This may be, I don't know if this is in your jurisdiction or maybe the Marine Board, but one of my goals is to look at what the long-range goal of how we can be successful as a state. And just as DOT does with their other fleets, if we had this as representatives, a picture of what the needs are going to be, you know, for the future, 10 years from now, 20 years from now, in replacing these fleets, clearly you're just trying to, you know, plug the hole, almost literally, right? We get that. But in this process, if you just had that pot of gold that could replace the vessels, it would be something that the legislature could look to and say, okay, we're going to have this need ahead of time. What can we do to be fiscally responsible and responsible for the reliability of service? So my request is, as you're looking at the needs of the fleet and working on your long-range plan, is that you put together something about what a reasonable glide path could look like to replace these vessels and the projected costs, the reality of the timelines, because just like with the Matanuska, you put out a bid and there were no takers right away. So that delayed that timeline. You had to make some changes, and kind of looking at it, just being able to get it to a shipyard, right, to be able to make those things, taking all of that into account, I think that would help us be able, and the public, know that you're being deliberate about providing this reliable service. But from my perspective, I want to know what's coming ahead to be able to plan financially for our best possible future. Thank you.
Mr. Phillips, I have one question. Climate responsive ferry vessel operations, that sounds very interesting to me. So what's the vision for that? Are we going to put charging stations up and down the canals, or are we going to go back to sails?
No, I think that particular vessel, there's only a few places that an electric ferry could go. I know this is in the very early stages. Design's not even done. This grant was just awarded. I know that they're looking at possibility between Ketchikan and Metlakatla. possibly Skagway to Haines. And I've heard as well that they're possibly looking between Homer and Soldovia. However, you know, as I have to put the disclaimer in, you know, this is in the very early stages. They'll have to decide what really is the best fit. I believe this will be more of a hybrid type ferry where you do have the electrical batteries that can make the run. But also, if need be, you would have a diesel standard type engine to run as well. But once again, it's the design hasn't even kicked off yet. This is very early. It's just talking about scoping at the moment. But there is a grant in place to study that, and that will be moving forward.
Thanks for that. I don't even know the answer to this question. Are most of our ferries diesel electric, or are they just straight screws? Diesel screws.
Generally, they're straight screws. There's a lot of our vessels have controllable pitch propellers, but generally they're you know just generally diesel and screws.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
You can continue.
Okay, thank you. So I'll continue to talk a little bit about each project now just for a moment. So we talk about the Columbia. The plans and the design is complete for the Columbia. Those plans, specs, and estimates are put together. There are sole source talks that are going on with the Pacific Northwest Shipyard for this project. And this project item will include a controllable pitch propeller, a CPP system upgrade, fire detection system upgrade, alarm and monitoring system upgrades, main engine and cooler upgrades, as well as a state annual overhaul. Something to keep in mind that I want to pass on to everyone in the room, we're going through some interesting times when it comes to engineering. Normally, in the past, pre-COVID, we could, you know, get something ordered and get it relatively quick, to the shipyard. What we're having issues with now are long lead times, unavailability of certain components, which is also causing, overhauls, capital improvement project delays. In particular, this controllable pitch propeller system, that we're talking about, there's an 8 to 9 month lead time once you place the order for this. So that's something that we're up against as well. The Matanuska that we talked about, there is actually a project for that as well. Same thing, the design is done. That's the plans, the specification, and the estimate has been put together. This project's currently on hold until upper management decides this actual status of the vessel. And that kind of goes hand in hand of what we're going to actually do. That's why we're putting this estimate together to see what we have to do to try to get her underway and to get her back on the run. Project items for this particular project are a complete cabin deck refurbishment, and that is complete gutting of the cabin deck, including all hazmat abatements, new piping, electrical, HVAC, new designed staterooms to remove all dead-end corridors. This was a solace or a safety of life at sea requirement. We also need to do upgrades to the main vertical zone fire boundaries. That's also a solace requirement and something that the Coast Guard has tasked us with taking care of. There'll be a stability upgrade, stability testing, annual state overhaul, and, of course, sea trials. The other project on that list is the Taslina. There is a sole source waiver that's been sent to contracting in Juneau. We're awaiting a phase two design authorization. The project's to install crew quarters aboard the Taslina, similar to Hubbard, which is finishing up. We're going to take any lessons learned from the Hubbard Alaska class ferry installation, and that will be included in the new specifications upgrades. And the crew quarters will allow the vessel to deviate from the standard dayboat configuration that it's under right now. Kennecott, that design is also complete. We have the plans, the specs, and the estimate together. The project items include a ship service diesel generator replacements, machinery control system upgrades, that's alarm and monitoring, waste heat boiler replacements, stability testing, and annual state overhaul. And if we could go to the next slide, please. This is FTOA, Federal Transit Administration awards for the docks. And I guess there's a $45.5 million award. The docks are responsibility of South Coast Region Engineering. And we'll go down the list. Prince William, let's see here. Tetlik has been given $10.5 million design. The design, the scope includes installation, and all of these are in design phases, I understand. The scope includes installation of transfer bridge and marine structures to accommodate the Alaska-class ferry vessel. The Chiniga is a $12.6 million. That's also in design. That scope includes installation of transfer bridge and marine structures to accommodate the Alaska-class ferry vessel as well. Cordova is a $6.2 million. That's also in design. So this scope includes installation of marine structures and modifications to the existing berth to accommodate the Alaska-class ferry vessel as well. And there's also other designs that South Coast Engineering is taking care of related to docks. Other design is there's some Prince Rupert ferry terminal acquisition refurbishment. That scope is revised to include renegotiation of a lease agreement with the Prince Rupert Port Authority and to incorporate necessary improvements to the berth for AMH vessels into the new agreement. There is Skagway ferry terminal mods. That scope is being revised to reduce the work focused on mooring chain replacement and minor transfer and a pedestrian bridge improvement.
Mr. Chairman, if it's okay, if I may interrupt for one moment.
Sure.
Yeah. So, Mr. Phillips, just a time check. I think it would be wonderful to provide an update on all of our current projects to the committee, but we only have 10 minutes left for the remainder of the slides.
Well, then I will just wrap it up. So that's essentially, this was a lot of information that got sent to me in regards to the docks. As I said, that is South Coast Engineering that takes care of the docks. I don't actually do that, but I was trying to speak to that a little bit. But as you can tell, there's certainly a lot going on with FTA awards and the work with the dock improvements.
We actually have more time than that, so we can go till 3 if we need to. So, yeah.
Yeah, and for the record, Catherine Keith, yeah, Mr. Phillips, that sounds great. Just the high level finish, and then it sounds like the committee's interested in hearing more details about the dock projects. If there's anything else you'd like to address,
mm-hmm. I can just speak. I won't do the I won't break down scope, but I'll just say Angoon Ferry Terminal has some improvements coming, Auk Bay East Berth Terminal improvements, AMH System wide mooring structure bridge and upland improvements. And in fact, in construction, what I'm showing here for South Coast Region is they actually have Auk Bay Terminal building electrical improvements. The scope includes remodeling of the terminal building, shore tie power improvements to the east side berth. So that's under contract, apparently. Ketchikan Ferry Terminal improvements. The scope includes improvements to the side fendering system, addition of marine structure access gangway, and electrical improvements. That also is under contract. Gus Davis Ferry Terminal improvements. That scope includes pile-supported lift towers for new bridge hoist system and separation of ferry and public harbor access. So that is pretty much all the slides I have, and I yield back to you.
Thank you. All right.
Yeah, for the record, Catherine Keith, yeah, thank you, Mr. Phillips. Clearly, we have so many projects going on, and there's more than even what we were able to share with the committee, and we're happy to provide an update in greater detail in writing anytime you would like one. And the last pillar of most immediate concern, I think, to many people is our crew health check, and I was hoping that Captain Tony Carvalhas could speak a little bit about our health of our crew, and by health, you know, how are we doing on the numbers of our crew and what are we doing to resolve it?
Oh, thank you. For the record, Captain Carvelis, acting general manager. So we've kind of touched on this a little bit, but the, you know, like other agencies in the state of Alaska and nationwide, we are suffering an unprecedented shortage of employees and mainly crew, the crew of these vessels. And, you know, we're trying different things. The one thing that I can say, I've been here for 14 years and I have never seen a commissioner's office open itself up to the Marine Highway System like this commissioner's office has done to help us resolve this issue. It's a very difficult issue. You know, there are resources, mainly money and people that the commissioner's office has helped us with to try to resolve the crewing issues. And we're very appreciative of that. The crew out there, we're very appreciative of them, you know, sticking it out to operate these ships. So a lot of times we have to hold the crew over and they don't, you know, they want to go home just like we do. And we're asking them to do these things to keep this system running. And I just wanted to throw kudos out to them and thank them for all their efforts. And I know it's been hard, but we are trying new things. We've tried some things that didn't work out so well. We're trying new things now to get the ball rolling again. We're not giving up. We are doubling down our efforts and trying to attract more crew. How are we doing that? We're working on LOAs with the unions to try to make working for the Marine Highway System more attractive. There's different things we can do within these agreements, and we're trying to make those happen. The union's been supportive. You know, I give them credit too. And they've been trying to work with us as much as they can, and they have been, and we're going to continue to do that. There are things we're doing, you know, like a dedicated recruitment webpage. We've tried to recruit over the years off of our Marine Highway System webpage. I know, I think it was one of the representatives asked about, you know, where does somebody go to apply? Well, you can go to the Marine Highway System webpage. I think you could go to Facebook. I think you could go to, you know, many places, newspaper advertisements we have out there. There's a ton of stuff. We're leveraging all of our media, our marketing department. You know, they would just go out in the past and try to attract customers to come and ride the Marine Highway System. Well, now they're also out there trying to recruit as well. So everything all at once, all of the above, we're trying to increase our numbers. I know from my contacts in the industry and from seeing the advertisements out there in professional magazines, that there's a lot of companies like our ferry system here in Alaska that are going through the same thing. But that's not, we're not going to settle. We need the people. We need to operate these ships and we're going to drive hard going ahead and trying to get this done. Other things we're doing, attending more job fairs, trying to get, high school kids to come and join us. You know, this is one of the industries where you can join right out of high school and work your way all the way up to captain. And some of our best captains in the Marine Highway System started that way. They started in the steward department and they worked their way up and, you know, they had a rewarding career. So usually in the Merchant Marine, you have two ways you can go. You can go in the deck department or you can go into the engine department. We have a third leg to this ship system where it's the passenger services department. And you can work your way all the way up to chief purser, you know, chief steward, and have a very rewarding, high-paying career. And we're trying to sell that to these kids getting out of high school. We're going to be going to a lot of the villages and trying to sell our business and our career to them. We're not offering you a job. We're offering you a career in Alaska. And so that's what we're doing. You know, we have a improved training and onboarding program we're developing. You know, we found that because, as Deputy Commissioner Keith mentioned earlier, that it takes so much time to get your credentials. Like, you need a you gotta go through an FBI background check and get what's called a TWIC, a Transportation Worker Identification Credential. And you gotta work your way, after you get that, you gotta apply. You know, you gotta apply for that, you gotta apply for your Merchant Mariner Credential. It can take months, 4 to 6 months to get those things. So we're going through, an improved plan for onboarding where we capture these people, who may not have all their documents yet, but we get them into our program, into our Alaska Marine Highway System, if you will, academy, to help them with their paperwork, finish up their, you know, their applications, get their documents, and put them to work in our fleet. Next slide. So you can see here, if you look down the left-hand column, what this slide depicts is that, you know, we do better in some areas than others. You know, we were talking about, before our meeting started, the pilots. A lot of our employees do go to the Pilots Association, and that's a major drain on captains in the fleet. And so right now it looks like, you know, we're doing great, but I know we're going to be losing 5 of them. In the coming year. So it's a concern, okay? And we need to try to work with the pilots as much as we can and also, try to retain our employees. The pilots organization is a very important organization, and I think we all agree that the Marine Highway System is important too, and we want to try to keep our people around as much as we can. But this slide, you know, if you look down the left-hand side, it shows that we grow our own employees from within. You know, we have a lot of stewards, but we're short on cooks and pursers. So those cooks and pursers come from those entry-level stewards, and we train them and upgrade them and support them with doing that. We have hired a lot of stewards, I would say, recently. You can see there that we have a little bit of a surplus, but it doesn't really show that, you know, if we still have issues because we have to train them and get them up in the higher level positions to do those jobs. So on the right hand side of this, you can see that we have the Aurora here, and what the outline means is that we're missing that person, right, in this. And this is where you, as I mentioned before, you can see where we have to hold people over. We cannot fail with some of these positions missing. We need them to comply with work rest regulation, and we have certain mariners that need to be on board for the certificate of inspection. But we want the ships fully crewed. A fully crewed ship is a happy ship, and we want to keep our employees happy because we want to retain them. So, and we want to stop having to hold people over. So the hiring is critical. It cannot be understated, and, I think that we're moving in that direction, trying to turn the corner and get things going so that we can run our ships.
So, Captain, it's Representative McCabe. What's the age bottom floor for age limit for employees for the ferry system?
18 years old.
So they have to be 18. Is that Coast Guard or is that state?
And I apologize, Representative. To the chair, yes, it's a Coast Guard requirement
okay.
to get a Merchant Mariner credential.
Okay. I wonder if, there's some innovative stuff happening in some of our high schools in the Mat-Su with training junior and senior high school kids, such as in fire science and other construction trades. I wonder maybe the Marine Highway System's interested in something like that, some sort of a ROTC Academy or something like that might be help recruiting.
Yep. To the chair, Senator McCabe, you are correct, sir. Those programs exist, and we can expand those as well. I still was a cadet when I was in school for one of the oil companies. My kid brought me out to Alaska, and we do have programs where we take, there's certain training centers around, like, down south, there's a place called Punk Point, and there's some union training centers, and We try to make our, it's like a work study program while the young adults are in school. And we take those, but that is a fantastic idea to try to, get some students from the high school, you know, maybe on a summer program. Very good idea. Thank you.
Okay, you can continue.
So the next slide. So we need to attract the employees, and we need to make it fun, right? Because this is Alaska. It's our great state, our outdoor state. Like I was mentioning before, to everybody, I first discovered Alaska when I was a cadet. You know, I didn't know what I wanted to do for a career, but I took a cadet shipping, assignment with ARCO Marine, and I was on a tanker sailing out of Cherry Point, Washington, up to Valdez, Alaska. And I thought, wow, what a beautiful place this is. And I'd really love to work here. And that's one of the exciting things about Alaska is that it's just the scenery, the outdoor thing, that you can do. It's a beautiful place. There's beautiful people here. And, you know, it's a big selling point for our business, for our marine highway system. So we need to keep it fun, try to concentrate on the positive things. I can tell you, you know, from being in the industry that, you know, there's always going to be a place where you can make more money. You know, you can always move around and chase money. But here you get to live a whole lifestyle that is unlike anywhere else in the United States. And we will concentrate on selling that. And also have a competitive advantage, but concentrate on the benefits of living in Alaska. So it is fun.
Hey, thank you, Captain Corvallis. And for the record, Catherine Keith. And I can just like to finish our presentation up just by mentioning we've been undergoing a comprehensive evaluation of our system because clearly we have a lot of passionate, committed people across both on shoreside and on the vessels and throughout DOT as an agency, and our stakeholder base is very, very large. It represents all of you, it represents our communities, and so we want to do the best we can to continue to perform at the levels expected of us. So we've been able to gather a lot of great information and recommendations on operational resiliency and efficiency, our information technology systems, our software programs, our financial vitality, and then lastly, our vessels, our fleet maintenance themselves. And we'll look forward to sharing the findings of some of these reports in upcoming weeks, but we've been able to get a lot of just good nuts and bolts recommendations on how our system can improve based on, you know, international best practices, some of which include planning. The suggestion of Vice Chair Vance is a very excellent one. You know, our engineering teams do provide like a 5-year engineering maintenance plan, which is how we've put forward our grant request in this instance, but we can always do better with our planning while we look at the preservation and maintenance needs of the vessels through the life cycle of their vessels. And there's excellent programs out there that can help us do that. And we look forward to incorporating those into our system as we move forward. And
all right, any other questions? Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a comment. You know, Ms. Keith, I think it might be a good opportunity to maybe mention your collaborative effort working with the AMHOB board based on Representative Vance's comment about the long-term sustainable plan for the AMHS and how AMHS is working well with the AMHOB board. I think that might be important. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Stutes, thank you. I would take that opportunity. The Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board, yeah, since February, we're going into a year now of our collaborative efforts, and our board consists of myself as deputy commissioner and 8 public members, and they've been meeting every other week for the most part for 2 hours, 4 hours, all day sessions. So we're happy to have that expert knowledge to provide some guidance for our system. Part of their deliverables include a short-range plan, comprehensive long-term plan, and identification of performance metrics
that they could then use to make recommendations for our system, the Marine Highway System, moving forward. Up until this point, we've been working on a short-range plan, which is really capturing a baseline of information, looking at what are our shoreside projects, our terminals, our vessels, what is that state of good repair for our terminals and our vessels, and being able to put numbers down on paper. And then that also gets combined with our operating budget and other factors. In our short-range plan this year, we'll be including some of the recommendations from our evaluation that was done so we can help incorporate that into our practices at AMHS. Alongside of that, we also have our long-range transportation plan, which is an effort that is undergone technically by Department of Transportation, but it's done in collaboration with the Alaska Marine Highway Operations Board. So that effort is underway right now. We have consultants on board to help with this preliminary effort, which is really a phase two. Phase one of our long-range planning effort has been just getting information and data in a very central location that's accessible and using the same assumptions, and that's been months of work to get to the point of being able to quantify where we're at with the system, and that's been just extraordinarily helpful to everyone that's involved with the Marine Highway System. Having that information, the long-range plan is really the next step in that, where there's stakeholder engagement. That's a big part of that. And looking at the service levels across not just Southeast Alaska, but Southwest and Prince William Sound as well. Our challenge with the Alaska Marine Highway Plan is that it's such an intermodal system. When we come up with the Alaska Marine Highway Plan, it also should consider the other modes that it is impacted by. And so that's where our area plans really benefit the process. So there's been a lot of work and concurrent planning efforts that we are excited to share, and information is available online at our websites. But there's always just so much more things that we can be working towards, and there'll be things to come. Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Deputy Commissioner Keith, for your presentation. Any other questions? So I'd like to thank you and folks that are here, Captain, soon-to-be Commissioner, I guess, Carvalhas, and fellow Coast Guard retiree, Mr. Phillips, and I thank the DOT for loaning us Mr. Pannone. Our next meeting is going to be, I appreciate you all being here today. Our next meeting will be next Thursday, February 16th, where we will be given an overview presentation on the Alaska Railroad. So seeing no other business before this committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect that the time is 2:40.